Welcome to Geek Salad, a podcast about two guys talking about their passion for anything geek, from the digital world to the not-so-digital world. Now here are your hosts, Randy and J.A. LaRocque.
Hey everybody, hello and welcome to episode 7 of Geek Salad. I am your host, Randy, and with me always is Mr. J.A. LaRocque. How's it going, brother?
It's going good, 2018. We back, baby.
We back! After real life took us away for quite some time.
Yes.
We're on lucky show number 7. It was a very nice holiday season. Good time to take time off. Of course, it was like pulling my hair out in real life with school and everything like that, which is why we could not bring another show to you wonderful folks out there in internet land. But we're back, baby. It's 2018. We're going to try and bring you as much as we can. How was your holiday, sir?
It was pretty decent. Unfortunately, I worked a lot like yourself. But, you know, that time and a half helps. You know, you got to pay the bills because I ain't making that lot of money in this obsolete gamer thing. I'll just be straight up honest.
We do this for the fans. We do it for you guys because we love you guys. It's for the love. Very, very nice holiday season. One of the things that I got, which was the first thing I kind of want to talk about in on today's show, which was an early birthday gift. And I got it as a really early birthday gift because I thought these things were going to be impossible to find because they already were. And that is the old Nintendo Switch. I will say this after playing it. Now it's been a couple of weeks that I've had this thing now. Own two games for it. Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, which like you have to get that game if you own a Switch. And Super Mario Odyssey. And I will say of those two games, hands down, Super Mario Odyssey is the best Mario game I've played that's out there. It is super fun, really, really great. Like, it utilizes the thing. And Zelda Breath of the Wild, by far, is the most unbelievable game I've played ever. Now, I laugh because it's like, I tell people, it is essentially Legend of Skyrim.
Yeah.
Okay, it is Legend of Skyrim. And if I had to give any type of negative to the game is how easily your weapons and your shield break, which kind of sucks, but you find so many weapons all over the place. It's not even funny. And I sat there and I've played the game a good amount of hours already. And the first thing that I did was I went out and got the Master Sword. And it is so nice to be able to have a weapon that technically breaks, but not really. So it essentially has an energy meter. And once the energy meter is depleted, it does the animation like it breaks, but it just sits in your inventory and you have to wait 10 minutes and then you can use it again. And it's neat because every other weapon, you can actually hold a button and Link will sit there and go like this and pull back with it. And when you let it go, he'll actually throw the weapon away. So you'll be weaponless. With the Master Sword, if you have full life and you do that throw animation, when he swings the sword, it basically does like what the old school Zelda used to do when you would have full life and swing the sword and it would shoot a bolt of energy out. So it does the same thing as that, which is really cool. Super Mario Odyssey, what I love about it is the way that the game itself plays and the whole idea with the hat that you can possess your enemies and things like that makes the whole game itself just another dimension of gameplay that's out of this world. But the thing about the Switch that I will say is amazing is Nintendo, I think, finally hit a home run with the system. Reason being, I say, is if you sit there and you look at Nintendo in general, they've always known what their strong suit was, which was the portable game market. Like, nobody can argue that Nintendo hasn't been, like, the best portable game handheld in all their systems.
Yeah.
And they've essentially made a system that, hey, I can plug it into my TV and play it. And, oh, hey, I've got to go and literally take your controller, slap it onto the side of the actual unit itself, pull it out of the dock, and now you have a portable game system to go with you.
And you don't feel like you're losing in quality like some people felt with the Wii U.
Right. And that was the big thing that when you sit there and you look at the closest thing that they had to this was where they came out with the game on the Wii or Wii U and they had it on the DS and you kind of had a kind of cross-platform, but there never really was a complete continuation of what you were playing. You know, that was I think the one thing that has made this system amazing to me. You know, because I will literally sit there and I will play. I will play more of it in handheld mode than I do in the dock mode. Because it's like, hey, I can sit there and have it, you know, while I'm laying in bed and I'm just, you know, shooting the breeze and just playing my game. And just that ability of it. And I mean, I love the fact that you can like just pull the Joy-Cons off of it and sit it on a table and just play with the Joy-Cons themselves. You know,
I have to say with Zelda, one of the things that I really liked is at first when I first saw it, I only saw like the outworld version of it. And at this, you know, at one point I was like, wow, that looks nice. But then I was like, man, I don't know if I just want, you know, running around like Skyrim, you know, that felt cheap. But then I realized how much they actually integrated the secrets, the puzzles that made mm-hmm. Zelda great, especially when you go into like the little underground areas and stuff. The temples is where most of the puzzles come from. And they were like interesting. You know, some were really simple and some you actually had a head scratcher in there. So I think blending that, you know, outworld, open world environment with that gave you that perfect mix. Because if you really think about it, Zelda, it was open world technically when you're playing mm-hmm. the game running around. And then you go into the dungeon and have that. And they kept that, but gave you that full graphic experience that people expect from games like Skyrim.
I think like what, when you sit there and you look at it, like to your point, like Zelda was an open world, but it was still very linear in how you progress through the game. This is completely open. Like they basically said, you can, from the beginning of the game, you can run to the last castle and fight Ganon. But they're like, you're never going to beat him, but you can go there. And one of the things that I found interesting about this game is when I first started playing it and I was in that initial spot that they put you in, I was like, yo, this map is big. Like, holy crap, it's going to take me a while to get around. And then you realize after you complete like the quote unquote tutorial that it opens up the rest of the world, that you're like, oh, wait a minute. I'm literally in one little chunk of the whole world. And that to me, when I saw like how big the actual world was, I was like, whoa, this is going to take me a really long time to play. And my first kind of like mission that I did is I literally went to every, I think I got all but one section of the land where I've already climbed all the towers and unlocked the map. So I think I have everything but one little tiny sliver of land, which I haven't seen where the tower is yet to unlock it, but I've unlocked everything else. And when you look at like how big to go from one end of the map to the other end, like it reminds me of the good old days of EverQuest. I'm like, I'm going to be running for like a half an hour, you know?
And but I just think it was great too, because there's so much to do. It's not just open space for open space, because sometimes you could do, you see some games did that. Like once you had that iconic game that had the open world and it was really fun and lots to do, you had other games that's like, we could copy it, but then you realize, wow, this is just a barren desert with maybe a few spots of guys. Mm-hmm. And then more, this is just a hill. Oh, here's finally a town. No, with Zelda, like, there's so much all over here. Quest here, something to find here, something to do here. And it, you didn't feel like there was that much just space for space sake.
Right. Like, you had, like, it was space, was like spaced out, but it had a purpose. And I think like one of the neat things that they introduced in this game is the whole like weather system and the elements. Like if you climb the mountains really high up, like you get into a part where it's cold. And if you're not wearing armor that will keep you warm, like you'll start losing life because you're getting cold. The first moment that I was like, what in the world was that? The first time I got struck by lightning.
Oh, yeah.
And it was hilarious because I'm like going through and I see the thunderstorm and I'm like, cool. And all of a sudden I start realizing my sword and my armor like chick, chick. And I'm like, what's going on here? And it was like chick, 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 chick. And then boom, I was dead. I'm like, what just happened? And then I realized like, oh, I got hit by lightning. I was like, holy crap. It was so freaking crazy. I was just like, these guys have thought of everything for this game. Like, totally blew my mind. Like, I will sit there and tell you, and I laugh because my thought process was, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to find a Switch post Thanksgiving. And here comes Black Friday. And I remember I was just so happened to be off Black Friday. And my wife and I were like, hey, let's go to Target or whatever. Like, we had to go to get something anyways. And we're walking through, and literally in the middle of the store is this pallet of like 10 by 10 and probably 5 or 6 high of just Nintendo Switches sitting there. And I was like, wow, I guess Nintendo really did ramp up production on these things. And even my brother, who was like, when I sat there and told him, like, oh, I'm getting a Switch, he's like, yeah, lots of luck in finding that after Thanksgiving on Black Friday. I sent him a picture of it. I'm like, hey, you want a Nintendo Switch? Because he was complaining, like, down there in Florida. He was like, man, it's almost impossible to find one.
Oh, man. You always get the best toys, man.
Yeah.
I'm envious.
That's because I'm married. And my wife loves me. The kind of other thing that I wanted to talk about was, so this was my Christmas gift for my brother. Game here called Charterstone, made by Jerry Stegmeier of Stegmeier Games. Now, one of the things that intrigued me about this game, it is what they call a legacy style game. So legacy style game, for you guys at home that don't know, is you play through the game a certain amount of times, and you alter the game itself as you go playing through the game. Now, the way that you alter the way that the game you play is, in the game itself, there's cards that have stickers on them. So in this one, you're actually building towns. Like, there's a kingdom that basically decided, hey, we're going to spread out and head to like an uninhabited land and build a city. And you play as one of these people as part of this kingdom. So as you go playing, you choose like, ooh, I want to build this building. And you literally peel a sticker off of this card and it goes stuck down onto the board. And that's now a permanent spot on the board. Hmm. What's really neat about it is I've seen two types of legacy games. There has been one like this where it alters the game itself and you play a certain amount of games, but then after you're done with that, it now becomes a permanent game that those are the spots on the board. And this one is a worker placement game, so it becomes a worker placement game that you can play with this now created board. What's really neat is the board itself is double-sided and it's the exact same board. You can actually purchase a refresh kit. So as you go playing, any cards that you use and all that that you're taking out of this main deck, you put it into what's called an archive. And when you get this refresher deck, you now know every single one of the cards that you've used. And you can now put that back in the main deck and you can play a second time, which is really neat.
So how long does this last, though? It's like before you would have to do a refresh.
So this one lasts for 12 games, and then you have your now new worker placement game, which is kind of cool, which is about 12 games is about what a lot of the legacy games are. Now, the original legacy game that ever came out that people know the most has been Risk Legacy. So what's neat about Risk Legacy is that one's actually 15 games long. And the way that it works is you play a game of Risk, and it's supposed to be in the far future. And then the person that wins signs their name on the board for the win. And then the person that loses chooses a spot and chooses something that happens. So one of the examples they gave was there was, I think, like Africa or Brazil or whatever, like in their playthroughs, had gotten to a point where it was producing a ton of resources. So people were fighting over Brazil, and when he lost, he was like, oh, really? And he put basically a nuclear fallout on Brazil, and now it obliterated everything that Brazil created. So it was this neat thing because they're saying, like, after you play these 15 games, now you have a permanent board that you play the regular Risk on, and all the different things that you've altered in the game stay altered on that board. And it's neat because in these type of games, like when you, I'll kind of like see if I can open it up here so you can kind of see what's neat about the inside of this game is everything essentially comes in these little like boxes. And the game essentially tells you this is when you open these boxes. So I have no idea what's inside these boxes. Like, I know what are in these boxes because these are the characters that you play. Here's my main deck of the game. Here is where I have the components. But these little boxes here, I have no idea what's inside of them. And these little boxes may or may not be revealed to me as we play the game, depending on what happens in the game. So it's really cool that you know that there's stuff in there, but you don't know what's in there. And I mean, I was reading online of people that played through the first 12 games and then they bought the refresh kit, and they say, like, you know, if you decide to play with a different group of people and you've opened up some of those boxes, like, you already know what's in there, but it's still fun to create this whole new campaign with people that don't know what's going on. And it's really cool because my wife and I have played one game of it and we're looking forward to playing the next one. And we've already added in stuff into the game that if you were to play the first game of this, you may not get that in your game. Oh, nice. And what's neat is as you go adding these different things, like the rule book actually has squares that are blank. Then as you go adding these new components and aspects to the game, you start sticking stickers in the rule book that now explain what's part of this game.
I've never actually played a legacy game, and just hearing you explain it sounds pretty awesome. It's just amazing that at tabletop games, there's so much variety, because people that don't know would think, oh, it's how much fun can you have with tabletop? There's probably only a couple of different things you can do, but no. With all the different games I've seen people play, collect, seen online, it's like, it's really fun. And I see why it's made such a big resurgence, where people are actually, you know, buying all these tabletop games and even going to like cafes and conventions to play these games. Yeah.
And the cool thing is, like, I sat there and I didn't realize it, but this guy, Jamie Stegmeier of Stegmeier Games, they literally have 5 games that they've released. Of the 5 games, Jamie Stegmeier has designed 4 of the 5. Those 4 games that he designed, I own. And this guy, oh, you got to check your windows. You just got a notification. This guy knows how to make games. And I have one of his games that I have yet to play, which is Scythe, which was a huge game last year at Gen Con. And he, on New Year's Day, announced a new expansion that's coming out for it that's going to create a legacy type of thing for Scythe. And what's really neat is the way he's designing it is he's going to design it where you can literally take all the stuff that you discover in the game, put it back into the boxes, and replay it without having to buy a refresher kit. So you can essentially keep playing this legacy type style of Scythe over and over and over and over again. And it doesn't mess up anything on the board. Because that's the only downside I see to this right now is I can sit there and play the 12 games, because right now it's my wife and playing, and there is a way to add players in and take them out while you're playing. So if I have a couple friends of mine that come over and they say, like, hey, we want to play, and I can add them into the game, and then if they leave and my wife and I want to continue playing, there's a way to automate how those characters play. So they're technically playing. But when you look at it, like, if I were to say there's only a downside to it, is I can only really play it twice as far as doing campaign wise, and then I have to basically buy a whole new game to do it. But I want to, like, it's gotten to the point where I've played this guy's games, all but one of them. Technically all but 2, but the second one that his company came out with, he didn't design. So I'm like, I don't know. Like, I may play it. I've heard good things about it. But I so want to, like, just reach out and see if we can interview him, because, like, I will sit there and say, like, there are very few, like, board games that I have that come from the same company. There's only one other company that I have, like, a bunch of their games, which is Tasty Minstrel Games, but they don't specifically have one designer that they work with. Like, they just get basically fun games of different designers that are making these games. And when you look at it, this guy, Jamie Stegmeier, not only runs this company, but he's designing these games. So it's amazing. Like, I will sit there and tell people, like, you cannot go wrong getting any Stegmaier game. And his design ideas are unbelievable. Like, I think other than this one, I've heard Scythe is really good. I haven't played that one yet. But I have another one of his called Europa, which it's almost like 1984, the board game. And it's a worker placement game. But the idea that he came up with for this is your workers are dice. And every turn you roll the dice. And I forgot how it is exactly the rule, but there's a specific number that you have to roll under. If you roll over that number, one or more of your workers realizes what's going on and they leave. So you can lose workers. And that was a kind of like thing of when you look at a lot of worker placement games, the idea is, okay, I want to get as many workers as I can as fast as possible because that gives me more actions I can do. He balanced that out by saying like, hey, if you end up rolling high, guess what? You're going to lose those guys that you just worked hard to get. So it was really interesting to see how he like put these designs in. Like he has another one, Viticulture, where it's about winemaking. And it's a worker placement where you have seasons that you put your workers out. You have specific spots you can put, but you can start growing grapes and crushing grapes and then turning them into wine. And if you leave them in your cellar, they'll age and they gain more value. So it's like, it's this crazy like machine that you have to build in playing his games. And he just seems like such a, like, I would love to just sit down and talk with him and just see like how his brain works. It'd be something that I'd have to figure out how to reach out to him and
yeah, we got to put that together and see if we can do that. I think the fans of the show would like that.
Yeah, but that's been one of the things that like I sat there and I played. Like I'm looking forward to it with my birthday coming up. Like sitting down and playing more games. And the other thing that I really like about this game is as opposed to a lot of the other legacy games, is a lot of the legacy games when you play them, like it takes like a couple of hours to play through one game. Like this thing, dude, you can cut a game in and out within an hour. Like easy. Like our first game my wife and I played, it was probably like an hour and a half. And that was because we were learning how to play. But I really think like we'll break out the board and we'll probably have the second game done in an hour. And that's it.
Nice.
But yes, yeah, so just in case y'all won't know, that is Charterstone from Stegmaier Games. Beautiful artwork and box, like it amazes me. Also, like he gets some like really great artists to work with him as well. So check it out; you guys won't be disappointed.
So, as far as my thing, the few moments—and I mean moments—of free time that I actually had, I started playing two games that are shooters but have, you know, RPG elements. And I find myself torn. I don't know if I like it or don't like it. And the two games were The Division and Destiny 2. Now, obviously, we know the game both have their faults and some people hate them. But for me, it's not about attacking the game. It's more about how I feel about the idea of a shooter where you're, that has that RPG element. So what I mean is when I'm playing like an RPG or something and you start off and it's like, you know, sword and board, right? And you think about it this way, that you start out and you might be fighting like a level one, you know, rat, or even it could be a demon, but it's level one and you have a sword. It might be a rusty sword or it might be a squire sword or something like that. And as you go forward, you know, you get items and you put it on. And I guess maybe we're so used to that, that it doesn't seem as out of place. You know, you get a new shield, even if the shield looks stranger or doesn't look as bright and shiny as the old one, hey, if it says it has more stats or has a special ability, so be it. You put it on. Same thing with gear. But man, it's like when I was playing, like, for instance, Division. In the Division, you're basically, there was like a terrorist attack where they put like a biological agent on money and it starts killing people like in the New York area. So you go in there and you're trying to not only kind of like a sleeper agent, and you're not only trying to find out what's going on and stop these people, but there's also like looters and people trying to kill people, all kinds of stuff. So you're running around with all these weapons, you know, shotguns, sniper rifles, handguns. But what's really strange about it is you still have that leveling system. So you might have a guy who has a flamethrower and he's level one. But if you run to a certain part of town, and for the most part, they try and separate it so you can gradually go. But some areas you can be like level 10 and run into a level 25. And it's funny because you're running to the level 25 and it's like some random gangbanger with a handgun, but he's just destroying you while the level one guy with the flamethrower isn't. And obviously in RPGs, you have the same thing where it could be a level 20 rat. And you're like, why is this rat owning me? But I don't know. There's just something about having a gun where I have a sniper rifle and I shoot a guy in the head and it does 10 damage because I forgot to switch to my newer sniper rifle. So this sniper rifle only does 10 damage and the new one does 256 damage. And I'm like, but I shot him in the head. Or, you're shooting a guy in the head like 3-4 times like you're fighting a boss. And I don't know why it's hard for me to get it. Because it's the same thing with, in RPGs. You can chop a guy with a sword 3-4 times and it's because he's high level or whatever. He has a high block skill. He's alive. But for some reason, I don't seem to have a problem with that. But when you shoot somebody with a shotgun and it's like, oh, it did glancing damage. It's just, I don't know. It hurts my soul. I don't know. Am I making any sense here, man? Well, or am I crazy?
So here's the thing. Like, in before the show that we were talking about this and you were saying like the two games that you get this with is Destiny and The Division. And it's funny because like I like The Division. Like I started playing it on the PlayStation. I got it now on my PC. And it's weird because when you look at the two games, it is Destiny is a first-person shooter that has RPG elements. And Division to me feels like an RPG with shooter elements.
Yeah.
And it's weird because like you say in the Division, like, ooh, I sneak up on this guy. We're about the same level and I'll take an assault rifle and I'm unloading on this guy. And oh, look, I fired an entire clip into this guy to kill him. Or like you say with the sniper rifle, I had to shoot him 3 times in the head. I'm like, look, I'm sorry. Doesn't matter what type of gun you have. If you shoot somebody in the head, they're going down in one bullet, you know? And that's, I think, where, like, I feel like kind of the same with you. It's like, it's cool that it's an RPG, and, oh, look, this gun does more damage. Cool, I'm going to sit there and take this. And it's neat to get that progression out of it. But at the same time, it almost feels like rolling dice on the table. Like, oh, yeah, I get another die that I can roll and get damage out of it. And it just doesn't quite feel like a shooter to me. And that's the thing that's funny about like Destiny is it feels like a shooter and it just has these like RPG elements where, hey, this gun does more damage. So instead of having to shoot 5 shots to kill him, I can shoot 4, you know? And yeah. Like, I'm agree with you. I'm like, I'm kind of like torn because like, I totally agree. Like if it's a fantasy thing, it's like, oh, I can understand. Here's a dull sword. Here's a sharp sword. The sharp sword's going to cut easier, you know?
And I think that maybe with Destiny, it's a little bit easier because of how it's sci-fi. And you could say, oh, well, maybe these aliens have armor and some of these aliens have a shield. Mm-hmm. Or maybe this energy weapon does different versus this energy weapon. And I guess it's closer to that RPG, regular sword and board, knights and armor element where you can suspend the belief, which I guess you should be doing as you're playing games anyway. But with the Division, it really stuck out to me because, like you said, there'd be a point where you're run up and sometimes there'll be just like spontaneous things going on. Like you're doing your mission and there'll be a spontaneous bank robbery or someone's breaking into a car. And then you go up and you select the person and then you unload your clip and all the bullets miss. And you realize it's because this group that's just running in circles around the city is level 20 and you're level 14. And it's just like, you're sitting there and you're stuck in this animation, like, and it's the guy's looking at you like you have a toy, and you just, it just feels so wrong.
I think my favorite thing in that game is where you're like, all right, I'm going to go to this mission. And you're just like running through the streets and you just run into a gang of people like, oh crap. And you get into this gunfight all of a sudden. But it's like, man, it's just so, it's like weird because I totally like agree with what you say. And when I sit there and I think of games like this, it reminds me of the old MMO Tabula Rasa, which was from Richard Garriott, which when you sit there and you look at it, like, that dude knows MMOs. Like, this is the king of Ultima Online, like the great granddaddy of all MMOs. And I remember playing it and I liked it, but there were elements of the game that I was just like, hmm. And one of the elements I did not like was to unlock skills for your character. You essentially had to go to different areas and find these like alien stone tablets and unlock them. So the weird thing about it was, is like you knew because it would show you what letters of these like tablets you had to find, but you didn't know where they were. So it was a lot of, okay, I need the J, the K, and the F. And you'd literally go searching online for somebody who found them and would post the coordinates of it, and then you would just go there and get them. But the gunfighting in the game felt so weird because it wasn't like, oh, I take my guy and I shoot at the alien. Like, it was the traditional World of Warcraft, like you clicked on the enemy and started hitting your skills.
Yeah.
So it was weird because, like, oh, it's an RPG. Like, the guns are just like, this is your weapon instead of a sword and a shield. And it's a shame that that game died out because it was just like, it had a really interesting idea. I feel like the implementation of it was just slightly off.
And I felt like that in some older MMO games too, like Anarchy Online. I felt like that. That was one of those games, like you said, like the old EverQuest, where you'd click on the guy, hit your skill, and you have to wait because sometimes the guy would like kind of aim and then you'd see the shots and it would do nothing because of, you know, random number generator. Same thing in the original Star Wars game that came out from Sony. And that was the same thing. You know, you'd have your trooper, you'd run out and there'd be like whatever, a sand viper or something. You click on it and it's like, blam, blam, blam. And you'd wait to see the little numbers come up. And it's like, you did 2, 4, 1. And you're there like, what? I just shot this little rat 7 times with an Imperial blaster. And that's it. I took a quarter of its health.
I came across on YouTube, and this is like an interesting thing to tie this all together, of a guy that does this series called Death of a Game. And he actually looks at old MMOs or old games in general that have shut down and looks into like what led up to this happening. And he's done a bunch on like, you know, like he did Star Wars Galaxies. He did like a whole bunch of them. And it's really interesting to see, like, he does a ton. Like, I have to give this guy a ton of credit. Like, he does a ton of research. And his videos are usually a good, like, 25 to, I've seen as long as, like, 35, 40 minutes. And the one that was really interesting was he did one on Star Wars Galaxies, and he just recently did one on The Old Republic. And it's interesting because like he'll do games that like people still play them now, but he'll do it on a suggestions of like people that they tell him like, hey, you should do it on this game. And he talks about how like when you look at like especially Star Wars Galaxies, that it was the first true like Star Wars MMO where you had like it was open sandbox. You decided what you wanted to do. Like, you want to be a smuggler? Cool, you're a smuggler. You want to be a bounty hunter? Cool, you're a bounty hunter. You want to be a Twi'lek that dances at the club and that's what you do? That's what you did. And that was what drew a lot of people to that game. And then when they did that refresh of the game where they completely changed it and now you had classes and all that, they thought, oh, we're going to like, you know, because World of Warcraft is taking off and we're going to get people to come to our game like that. That actually, what's funny is in this guy's research, it drove even more people away from the game.
Yeah, and they changed the combat system too.
Yeah, and they were saying that like people that played Star Wars Galaxies for Star Wars Galaxies, when they saw them do that, they're like, this is not what we wanted to do. Like, we like the old system. And I mean, even he goes even into the whole, like, when they first added in how to become a Jedi in Star Wars Galaxies.
Yeah.
That I remember reading what you had to do, and I was like, yo, these guys are insane at what, like, you have to grind out to become, like, a Force-sensitive character. And then I remember the whole debacle that happened, that once you created the Jedi, that it was very, very difficult for people to kill you. But then it got to a point that, like, if you died, you were dead. And then you had all these, like, clans that would put bounties on these Jedi.
Yeah.
Like, millions of credits to kill Jedi, you know? But, like, that's a thing where, like, his series is so great, because he really goes into, like, a whole bunch of different ones. And it's like, and he did one on Tabula Rasa, and he talks about how it broke down and all that stuff. And he even, I believe, interviewed Richard Garriott about it. And Garriott basically was there for, like, the initial phase of it, and then he stepped away from it. Like, they basically said, cool, we will take it from here. And he basically just had his name on it, and he really didn't know what was going on with it.
Oh, man.
Yeah. As opposed to, like,
this.
Yeah, as opposed to, like, Ultima Online, that he still had input into the game.
I still wish that Ultima Online 2 came out. I was sad when that went down in flames.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many games when you sit there and you look at, like, good old MMOs. I will still say to this day, if there is one MMO that I miss, it's City of Heroes.
Oh, yeah.
And he did one on City of Heroes, too. And that, man, that game was, man, I missed that game, because that was so much fun to play. Like, I remember my two favorite heroes that I had. I had a defender, so a healer. And I suck at playing healers. But that was the only game that I enjoyed playing a healer.
Like, it was crazy. There's a few things to me right off the bat why I knew City of Heroes wouldn't succeed that long. And one was not enough tile sets. You can't have a game where, you know, it's an MMO and it's either a warehouse, an office building, a laboratory, or the park. True. Or a sewer. I'm sorry. So it was like five. And the other thing was, and I didn't learn about this until later, originally in the early beta of the game, it was open. You could pick whatever you wanted. Like, for instance, if you wanted a character that just had all travel powers, and how they worked in City of Heroes is after you reach a certain level, you would get, like, jump, then super jump, and then hover, then fly, then sprint, then super speed, and so on. Teleport. So if you want to make a character that's all that they could do, that's it. You just pick, you know, travel powers, and that's it. And towards the end, they were like, man, you know, we're worried that people will end up making characters that gimp themselves because they don't have enough powers to compete in later levels. Hmm. And what's strange about that comment is City of Heroes is one of those games where people love to make new characters. Like, people thought that you made a lot of characters in World of Warcraft. People were inventing characters just to go and dance in Atlas City, you know, for no reason. So the idea that you would draw people away because they might make a character they don't like or that's gimped and they have to start over. No, they should have went with that original concept that you could pick whatever power you want, no matter what, and just go with it.
I think my favorite thing about that is like, if you created, like, you could, what was funny is you could create so many, like, clones of, like, Marvel heroes, but it was hilarious because if you named them the IP name, they would make you change your name. So what was hilarious is I had a tank who was huge, green, wore purple shorts called Bulk. I had a scrapper that had the claws for his weapon and had an exact costume of Wolverine, and I called him the Badger. Like, it was amazing how you could sit there and make these characters, like, you could customize their costume. And I agree with you. There was people that would just spend time just creating these characters to look like Marvel or DC superheroes and name them whatever. And they would just play around and go through like, I never had a max level character. I think the highest I got was in my 20s or something. And I think max level in that game was like 30 or something like that.
Yeah, I think in the end it was 40. And I think, yeah, for me, I got into the mid-20s when you got to places like Bricktown and stuff like that. And I was like, by then I was losing interest. World of Warcraft was coming out. Conan was out.
So, and I will say this, dude. Like, if you never played it beyond that, that game, like, leveling became a non-issue once they came out with this one mini expansion where you could create missions.
Oh, yeah.
Because it literally turned into like, oh, you're going to run the simulation like a real mission. And it was a rectangular map of a city. So it was building, 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 building in between blocks. And literally every corner or every street that you went over was a group of like 20 or 30 bad guys just clustered together. So you'd grab a group of five together. You'd go into the first cluster, rip through those 30 guys. You go to the next cluster, rip through those 30. And you just literally ran the whole city around. And I remember the first time I did it, I went in as a level 20. I finished one loop around with this like map, and I was already 25. Oh, like, God. I gained 5 levels just going around one time, and I'm like, holy macro, they completely broke this game. So you had a ton of people that were maxing out their characters, running through the end game raids just because, you know. And then it got to a point where people would create these missions and just make them harder and harder and harder just to see how far you could go with your heroes.
Yep.
You know?
I thought that was interesting. They did the same thing in the Neverwinter Nights game. Mm-hmm. They made it where you could create maps, and people made some really interesting stuff, scavenger hunts, all types of stuff. It's amazing because sometimes you expect that players will end up making really terrible things. And obviously, there was some that were bad, but they had a good rating system where there would be votes from multiple people, and you would see like, oh, this is actually a well put together map. And it's like, oh, this one someone threw together in 5 seconds just for a joke. So it was interesting.
But yeah, like, but it's like I said, like, I enjoy playing through The Division, but at the same time, it's like, okay, all right. You know, like, this is ridiculous. Although it's funny because I picked up for the PC the like the gold edition or whatever it is that has all the DLC in it. And I can tell you with the like the DLC from the get-go, because of course I had to start all over from the beginning. Dude, you start getting purple weapons right off the bat now. So I'm like, oh, okay, 4 shots. Boop, 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 boop. That guy's dropped. Boop, 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 boop. That guy's dropped. Boop, 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 boop. I'm like, all right, I'm cutting through the early game. So you can see how they're like, they're trying to get you to progress through the early game stuff real quick so you can get towards the end game stuff. But I still, I like really enjoyed the story of The Division. I just finished beating Wildlands. Let me tell you, if you want a game that's like a second job, boy, get yourself Wildlands. That is a third-person shooter. It is open world, kind of like Division, but no RPG. Like, it has, I won't even say it's RPG elements. Like, you can find different weapons that do more damage or whatever, and more penetration and blah, blah, blah. But the thing that I found funny, one of the last DLCs that they came out with, they added a mission into the game where the name of the mission is called The Jungle Is Moving. And then you go to this like one area and it's in part of the jungle, and you see this girl that's got like blood all over her, and she's freaked out, and she speaks kind of like Spanish. And he's like, oh, what's going on? She's like, oh, it came out of the jungle and it grabbed them. It was crazy and this and that. And she like starts talking in like half Spanish. She's like, what in the world are you talking about? She's like, ay, Dios mío, they're all dead. And then it tells you like investigate in the forest. So then you start going through, and then you get to this first area and you find like a whole bunch of like human skulls, and then skulls with the spine still on it, like clean. And they're like, what the heck is going on here? And this and that, you know? And then like, you go to the next area and you go to the next area and you see guys stripped of their skin hanging upside down. And they're like, yo, the cartel can do some pretty messed up things, but I've never seen anything like this. Mm-hmm. You know? And then you like investigate the third area. And what do you see? You see a crashed alien ship. And they're like, is that a, no, it can't be. So then like you hear this like roar, and then you go out to this section of the jungle, and guess who you run into? A predator.
Oh.
And yo, when I tell you it was hard to kill this thing, it was hard to kill this thing. Like, I must have tried 6 times. And what's really cool is when I finally got him, you like get to the thing and you see him kind of like drop down on one knee, kind of like slouched over. And you kind of hear him like, and then it like the mission changes to like confirm the predator's dead. Now what's really neat is when you're fighting him, you'll hear running and you'll like turn and you'll see like the kind of like wavy thing of him running through the jungle.
Oh, the cloak, yeah.
Yeah, with the cloak. And then what's neat is you'll hear him every so often taunting you, like him in your own voice saying, "Is that real?" Like just like the movies, dude. And then like what's neat is you see him kind of like slouched over and you run up to him and all of a sudden you see him kind of like stand up and he goes tick, 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 on his arm. And as soon as it's done, you hear him like, oh, 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 oh. And then like your mission is escape the area. And it was so funny because I ran out and I just crossed the safe zone and my three AI guys were still in the zone when he blew up and all three of them got dropped dead. I was like, oh my God, I could have died there. It was so funny. And I was like, dude, that was a cool mission to throw into the game.
Oh, man. Now I got to check that out.
Yeah, look up Ghost Recon Wildlands Predator mission, and you'll see the whole mission. And it's insane. But, yeah, man, I guess that wraps it up for another Geek Salad. Number Lucky number 7 in the books.
Woo, lucky number Woo, 7.
Lucky number 7. 2018.
So much good to come.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to doing more shows, man. Now we have some more free time.
Definitely.
But as always, guys, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you guys. We appreciate every comment that you guys leave us, every thumbs up, and every subscribe that you do. So get the word out there. We'd love to get more subscribers so we can continue to make this great content for you guys. But as always, I'm Randy. He's JA. Till next time, guys. Enjoy your games. Have fun. Peace.
Hey guys, listen, you like the games, you like the interviews, you like the shows, how about you click on that subscribe button and also give us a like? We really need your help here, huh?